All right. Now, one thing we also do from time to time, I try and include if I can find a good one to look at, is notes from the margin. Notes from the margin. I encourage everyone to get a wide margin Bible. You can make your own notes in that, but you can put sermon notes there, or you can have Bible class notes there, but have the idea of notes in the margin. If you have a Bible, get a wide margin one if you can. They're very handy. I want to go, if you would, though, go with me to Exodus chapter 7, verse 3. And that's this idea of notes from the margin. Look at Exodus 7, verse 3. I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. Now, if you look at this, there's other verses you can look at to see, well, how did God harden, or did God harden Pharaoh's heart? What's that mean exactly? So you can look at, for example, chapter 7, verse 13. It says, and Pharaoh's heart, rather, grew hard, and he did not heed them as the Lord had said. So the idea was, when Moses and Aaron went to him to tell him what to do, he would not do it, so his heart grew hard. Or you look at verse 22 of the same chapter, then the magicians of Egypt did so with their enchantments, and Pharaoh's heart grew hard. He did not heed them as the Lord had said. So secondly, when they commanded him and then brought plagues, his own magicians were able to mimic them in such a way which it made him think that Moses and Aaron had no real power. All right. Nextly, in Exodus chapter 8, verse 15, it says, when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, that is, when he saw the plagues would recede, he hardened his heart. He did not heed them as the Lord had said. So he hardened his heart. So what do we have? We have he didn't want to do what God said, hardened his heart. He saw the plagues would recede, hardened his heart. And so these things also play a factor. And when Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, and the thunder ceased, he sinned yet more. So he saw the plagues, and then when they receded, he just doubled down on his sin. In chapter 10, verse 20, we see that, but the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart that he did not let the children of Israel go. So what are we talking about here? If you would, consider that first the Lord made demands on Pharaoh, which went against his own personal interest. So he had his will and God's will, and when God gave a command against his own will, that hardened his heart. So it was against God's commands. He chose to refuse those, which hardened his heart. Secondly, the king resisted the divine command, then hardened his own heart that way. Thirdly, you had the magicians attempting, they tried to duplicate Moses' signs, which confused him and hardened his heart. And these facts indicate that the evil ruler was responsible for his own conduct. He was not made the victim of an angry God. All right, he wasn't a victim of God's commands. He just simply hardened his own heart. So if you would, if you like to do this follow along, what hardened Pharaoh's heart? Right next to Exodus 7:3, right? 7:13, 7:22, 8:15, 9:34, and 10:20. That gives context to what it means that when God hardened Pharaoh's heart, it mentions things like he hardened his own heart, the magicians, that he resisted God's commands and wanted to do his own will. Those things are helpful there. So if you want to play along with it, notes in the margin, make those notes. It'll be helpful to you in your further Bible study. All right. Well, the question is, in what way did God harden Pharaoh's heart? And those verses are a good context. Right. Because one verse says he hardened his own heart. Others say God hardened his heart. The problem is, well, if God hardened his heart, then how could God punish him? Right? How's that work? It doesn't work that way. So anyway. Yeah, it works the exact same way for sure. Yeah. That's why you want to answer the question. I actually have some notes in the margin to help us understand this, because this comes up from time to time. I know I've talked about this and answered the question box like this many, many times over the past 30 years. All right. So we're in chapter 15, and we have talked about events preceding the crucifixion, verse 1 through 21. We talked about the conspiracy in Mark 15, verse 1, that the conspiracy included chief priests and the elders and the scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus and they led him away and delivered him to Pilate, right? So we see that there. Next we have in 15, verse 2, we move on from the conspiracy to the confusion in chapter 15, verse 2, and we see where Jesus came before Pilate, and Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered and said to him, "It is as you say." Then we go to chapter 15, verse 3 through 5. We have the charges given about Jesus. These charges. And the chief priests accused him of many things. He answered and said the thing, but Pilate asked him again, saying, "Do you answer nothing? See how many things they testify against you." But Jesus still answered nothing. So Pilate marveled. And the idea was his silence was deafening. Right? His silence was deafening. So the slander was, hear all these things, but the silence was, he didn't even say anything about it. And when that happened, you see, the Bible says the Pilate marveled. He was amazed at the fact that Jesus would not fight back. But Jesus' purpose was to die for the sins of the world, not to fight back. Jesus could have fought back. Jesus could have called, as we sing the song, he could have called 10,000 angels, but he did not. That leads us to the next section, the custom, chapter 15, verse 6. The custom, I think we left off here. You see that in verse 6, it says, "Now, at the feast, he was accustomed to releasing one prisoner to them, whomever they requested." So this idea of custom is in the imperfect middle tense, which means it was a habit. Now, imperfect tense in the Greek indicates action, which is continuing action. We talked before about in the Greek language there's several tenses, and we don't really have to know these things, but they help us understand things a bit easier. For example, there's like point actions, staccato, it happened. It's kind of, it happened, and some things, sometimes, some verbs mean it's happening and ongoing, right? And so this is ongoing. It was a custom that every Passover that Pilate had trying to appease the Jewish citizens there in the area, that he would let loose one condemned man as a nice thing at the Passover time. Right. Now we go to verse 7 through 14, which is the choice. So what did the crowd want? We see, and there was one named Barabbas, who was chained with his fellow rebels. They had committed murder in the rebellion. Seems pretty bad. Then the multitude, crying aloud, began to ask him to do just as he had always done for them. They wanted someone to let go. But Pilate answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" For he knew that the chief priests had handed them over because of envy. All right. So what did he deduce from this? Now again, this word this word "new" here is also in the imperfect tense. What's imperfect again? What's that mean? Ongoing. So what's, if the word new here is ongoing, what's that, what picture does that paint for in the text for us? What picture does it give us? What colors does it bring out? He knew ongoing. So what this means is it was dawning on him. It was becoming apparent to him that the picture is, as he sees as this unfold, he sees that there is something going on here, right? It's not just a simple fact, this is a bad man. No, he sees something happening here, which indicates to him that there's not, something isn't quite right with it, right? He begins to know the chief priest had handed him over because of what? Envy. Now, I don't know all the things that he saw that made this appear to his mind. I don't know all the things he must have perceived here. But I know that he was smart enough to figure out there's a problem here. Something is going on that's underhanded when it comes to the wanting to have Jesus killed. Maybe he knew about the things in the temple. Probably not. But when he says this king of the Jews, that might be a dig at them because Pilate would have known about this entry of Jesus into Jerusalem just days earlier. What did the people say? Remember what they said when he came into Jerusalem, the triumphal entry? What did they say? Hosanna, son of David. That means son of David, save us. Now the son of David is the idea that he's a king. Or at least heir to be king, right? And save us, son of David. So Pilate probably would have heard about this because he was in charge of the area, and he would have seen or heard of, maybe even saw the procession, this massive uprising of Jesus, save us. So this might be a dig at them. Might be a dig at the Jews who would say, hey, we Jesus, he's the son of David. Save us, son of David. So this might be a dig at them because they changed so quickly and were fickle about it. What they want. But the chief priests did what? They stirred up the crowd. So he should rather release Barabbas to them. He answered and said to them again, what then do you want me to do with him whom you call the king of the Jews? Again, he said, whom you call the king of the Jews. So he's talking to what they referred to Jesus as. He had heard things. Now look, if you would, at the idea of the, it says, verse 11, but the chief priests did what? Stirred up the crowd. They stirred them up. Now, it's not used this way in the New Testament. However, this word stirred up is a Greek word for earthquake. I usually like when I define a word to find other passages inside the New Testament itself where you have that word used that way. And so the word for earthquake used in the New Testament a couple times is not this word. But in ancient Greek language, this word stirred up means to shake or make the ground to rumble. So when they were stirring up the crowd, they were causing something like a large event. Now, how many of you have heard of the idea of the wisdom of crowds? Wisdom of crowds. Who's heard about this? What this means is, it's been demonstrated lots of times. In fact, I would probably say it's been demonstrated during our 2022 riots, Keith, you know, where a few people get together. If you go to one person and say, hey, should we burn down this gas station? Nah, it's crazy, right? No, we'd never do that. But you get a lot of people together, and like one or two people that are angry, a crowd can do something that an individual would never do, right? It could be a lynching, for example, like people are angry, and one person says, kill him! Oh, yeah, let's all kill him! Individually, if you separate the people, you say, should we kill this guy? No, maybe one person. But when you get people together and one person gets ready, you can stir up the crowd to do things they would never otherwise do. That's why we're talking wisdom of crowds, meaning crowds, that phrase means with crowds there is no wisdom at all, right? Crowds just follow somebody who can rile them up and kind of push them one direction, kind of like a, it's kind of like a sheepdog, right? Gathering sheep and pushing them one way or the other. That's what we're talking about. So that's this idea of the, a few chief priests could strip the whole crowd. Those same people were who were yelling, David, save us, son of David, save us, days earlier, were now yelling, crucify him. Even though the one that was Barabbas was there, he had killed people in an uprising. So he was guilty of murder. Uprising. And so they say, no, give us that man, the murderer, and you killed Jesus. How? Because a few people were allowed to rob the whole crowd. Does this remind you of anything where Jesus would say, reminding you of your mind, where Jesus had said, a little leaven does what? Leavens the whole lump. Jesus said there, a little bad influence can ruin the whole batch. I think here you see that because these people who just, again, days earlier were yelling, Son of David, save us. Hosanna, Son of David. We love you, Jesus. We love you. They saw his miracles, heard his teaching. They loved him. And now so quickly, things changed so rapidly. Why? I'm sure there were other factors, but the one the Bible gives us here is there are a few people, a few leaders in this case, chief priests, and there were two chief priests now, right? Why were there two? We talked about this last time. There were two because there was the chief priest traditionally, which would be Annas, but also his son-in-law Caiaphas. And why were the two chief priests? Because whenever the Romans took over the area, they took charge of who was chief priest. So there was the one traditionally, which was Annas. But then for some reason, the Jews, the Romans came in and said, listen, we want Caiaphas to rule. Because maybe Caiaphas was maybe more able to be molded by the Romans, possibly. Right? We don't know exactly why, but he thought that's the reason. If you read the commentaries, they suggest that. That the Romans were now in charge, so they chose the Jewish rulers. Which is not the way it was supposed to be, right? The way it was supposed to be was you had a Jewish high priest, and he was a priest till he died. Then a successor from his line was put in place. But now they have two, and one was the Roman ruler, that or the Roman choice, rather. The other one was the traditional Jewish. And so it was an odd thing because the Bible refers to both as high priests, but really it's supposed to be just one. So this shows the crumbling of the Jewish situation here at all. Shows it's kind of falling apart. And they were riling people up. But they were riling people up because they were envious of Jesus' popularity. Maybe his teaching, maybe his popularity. So they were envious of that, right? And so he says, again, what then do you want me to do with him whom you call the King of the Jews? So they cried out again, repeatedly, crucify him. Then Pilate said to them, why, what evil has he done? So he asked a question. You want me to kill him? Why do you want me to kill him? What'd they say? What was their logical answer? Their well-reasoned, thought-out answer? Did they have one? Do irate people have reasonable answers to questions? We go back to the thing we hear in our culture, at least one person says it a lot, that facts don't care about your feelings. Also, the reverse is true. Feelings don't care about your facts, right? And so if someone's not in a reasoning state, they don't care what your reason is. They don't want to answer questions, right? Forgive me for saying this, but this reminds me about when people get in arguments. Now, sometimes you can have a discussion about an issue you're having with maybe your wife, maybe your husband, maybe your friend. But have you ever talked to someone who's just mad, they're just angry? Y'all ever have a discussion with people that rent things from you that just aren't reasonable? They get mad about something for whatever reason, they don't want to talk about it? You do have that sometimes, right? Maybe if a child gets hurt and you're trying to talk to them about what happened and they don't want to reason about it, they're just angry that you're hurt, right? They don't want to talk about it. They just know they hurt. And so when it comes to this idea of sometimes crowds go crazy, if people get just mad, they don't want to hear reason. Why? It doesn't matter. Why am I angry? So what's going on here, it looks like. That's right. That's a mob mentality. Is probably a better phrase than wisdom of crowds. People would never by themselves say do this or do that. But when in a mob, they would. Mobs are dangerous, right? Mobs are dangerous in Dallas, New York, L.A. Also, mobs could be dangerous in a place like Heiko. Whenever people get together and they're angry about, if you people are angry, they can guide the mob to do things that they would never otherwise do. So be careful about that. All right. Now I put Luke 23 here because Luke gives some insight here. In Luke 23, we see this in verse 14 through 16. He said to them, "You have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I found no fault in this man concerning these things which you have accused him." What did Pilate say in Luke? "You brought him before me, saying he did bad stuff." He says, "I have no reason to think that. I've examined him in your presence. I see nothing wrong. No, neither did Herod, for I sent you back to him. And indeed, nothing deserving of death has been done by him." Now this sets up what happened next. Because in verse 16 he says, "I will therefore chastise him and release him." So we don't see this in Mark. But in Luke's account, he says, "Listen, you're mad at him? Fine. I'll chastise him. I'll punish him, I'll beat him, right? But then I'll do what? Let him go." Now, Mark doesn't say it like that. Mark skips that part. Again, Mark's all about the action. So Mark says, "I'll chastise him." And then right after chastising, they take him to be crucified, right? But in Luke's account, we see the plan was to do what? "I want to satisfy the crowd, because they're angry, we'll beat Jesus, we'll hurt him real good, let him go." Right? "I want to please the crowds." We'll talk about that more in just a second. All right. Now we have the chastening in verse 15. So Pilate, wanting what? To gratify the crowd, release Barabbas to them and deliver Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. Now, to gratify here you can't see it in English, but it's a play on words. The word literally means it's a phrase that kind of in one word, but it means to make a path enough. Or make enough of a path. So gratify means I'm trying to make a big enough path so you're happy. I'm trying to make you feel better. So I'm trying to give you enough room to feel better. It's a certain phrase in the Greek that means that. And so he released Barabbas to them and delivered Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. A question here, a good question to ask in this verse. How many people like Pilate do you think we have in the Lord's church today? How many people like Pilate do you think we have in the Lord's church? What's that question mean to you? If Pilate was trying to gratify the crowds, he knew they were wrong. He knew it was all a scam. But they were riled up, so to give them what they wanted. Not standing up for God. Even though you know the things against God, maybe people upset about a thing, makes no sense at all. But sometimes you have people like that. Sometimes we are ourselves maybe tempted to be like Pilate here, but it's not right. So when we see what happened here, we see, well, how many people in the church are like that? They're just going to go along with what the crowd wants, what the popular ideas in culture, and not stand for what God wants. They know in their hearts what's right, but won't do it. We need to be like the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul in Romans 3:4 said, "Let God be true and every man be a liar." Pilate did the flip side. Knew it was right, but wanted to please men. Paul said, "Let God be true, but every man be a liar." So, everybody, all men can be wrong if God's right. Because of God being right is all that matters. Maybe you've heard a bumper sticker. What was it? I lost a bumper sticker in my brain, Keith. The bumper sticker says, I think it says something like, help me out with this. With me and God, there's a majority. It's not how it goes, though. I can't quite find it in my mind. It was there a moment ago. But the idea was God's majority, even if I don't go along with God either, right? God's always right, whether I agree with God or not. And so the idea is, you know, if I want to be right, I'll agree with God, right? All the world can be wrong, but God can be right, and God's still right. Now, think about this as a law, for example. There are certain things that are just going to happen. If I were to hold up this remote here and drop it, what would happen? It would bounce off the cushion. What if we all right now decided if Jim drops that, it will not fall? We all agree, we'll all take a vote that for this remote in this second time, gravity will just stop working. Would it stop working? Would it still fall? That's the law of God, right? So we can all tell God's law, no, but it's still going to happen. And so if God is right, if God is God, then all people against him doesn't really matter because God's rule is still God's rule. And those, by the way, those things God gives us are for our good, right? I saw an interview with a famous British atheist. I forget the atheist's name, but he's very well known, still alive today. He made the point that the Bible, why would anyone believe the Bible? It's all about slavery. The Bible is all about serving God. Who wants to be slave to anything, right? He goes, I would never believe in God because that means you're going to be slave to God. And the answer was this, well, if you follow what Jesus said and what Paul said, man's a slave to something. Paul said, either sin unto death, right, or belief in God to righteousness. But all men serve something. So the Bible's not slavery. It's actually setting us free because Jesus said, Come unto me, all you labor and are heavy laden, and what? I will give you rest. For what? My burden is what? Light. Learn of me, my burden is light. Compared to slavery of sin, which we all serve something. All mankind serve something. All men, all women serve something. The question is, what is it? Is it self? Is it sin? Is it addiction? Or do we serve Christ? And well, we fought those other things, it gives us freedom. Great question. Right. We'll pause there and come back in a few moments for any questions before we take our pause for worship. Yes, ma'am. Well, Luke indicates that the plan was to scourge him and let him go, but Mark indicates that this it was very fluid. They just, all the others besides Luke. So it looks like maybe his plan was to let him go, but as the crowd got more and more riled up, maybe he was trying to gratify the crowd. So looks like he intended one thing, but in for a penny, in for a pound, right? And oftentimes when we choose to do a thing, how many times the thing we do snowballs into something else? That ever happened to you? Where the thing you plan to do goes way further than you thought? This applies to young people, and sin also applies to us in sin, right? How many times has the alcoholic said, I'll just have one beer? Then 3 days later, he's been on 3 days drunk, and things have gone very, very wrong, right? So we intend one thing, but sometimes that one thing goes way beyond what we intend. That happens a lot. Yes, ma'am.
Is there anywhere that indicates that Pilate repented?
I thought about that. There was a movie. All I know about is the movie. I don't know of any other text that I could just have I could be having a memory problem that happens to me sometimes recently, but I don't recall a text that talks about that. I do know there was a movie about that, a famous movie back in the 50s or 60s, that was talked about how, I forget the name. Anybody know the name of the movie? Name of the movie? Where he, evidently he was terrified by horrible nightmares after this happened, and he was on ocean trip on a boat, and that's all I know about the movie. But I have clips in my head, but it's all.
I just always wonder about people like him in the Bible history that if they ever did turn to the Lord,
I
guess we'll
know
one day.
I guess we will one day for sure. Thank you for that. Any other questions? Let's take a break before worship.